Perhaps one of the biggest lessons learned at the ballot box last weekend was the electoral power of Australian women. Across the country, men lost seats to victorious female candidates, including a host of Teal independents. And the change is also reflected in the upper house, with more women set to take their seat on the Senate's red benches. Three women who've been involved in this shift in one way or another join me now. Julia Banks is a former Liberal member for Chisholm who turned independent. She was a Climate 200 advisor during the campaign. Georgie Dent is the executive director of the Parenthood, an advocacy group for women, families and children. And Lisa Annese is the CEO of the Diversity Council of Australia. Welcome to all three of you.
Hi, Patricia.
Good morning, Patricia.
Look, let's get into what I think is one of the most fascinating political stories that I've seen. Julia, beginning with you, women really flexed their voting muscle on the weekend. But were you surprised by how much they changed the makeup of our parliament?
No, I wasn't, because I was relieved, I've got to say, and very excited. But I think women and men saw the performance of the last 3 years of Scott Morrison and the Morrison government, the inaction on climate change, the obstinance around the Integrity Commission, and the year that was 2021 in relation to the treatment of women, starting with Brittany Higgins going public with her story. And I don't think, and people did not forget that. People did not forget our demands as a country for the safety, respect and equity for women. And so they voted accordingly.
Julia, the notion of the coalition having a sort of woman problem has been tossed around for years. You yourself were one of the first to call this out almost 4 years ago when you announced you'd been bullied by your own party. If its woman problem was known for years, why was the coalition still so caught out by women abandoning it in droves?
Well, I think they were blind and deaf to entrenched the anti-women toxic culture had become under Scott Morrison's leadership. I mean, that's in fact the reason I left the Liberals. I was at first only intending to not recontest the next election, but 3 months after under his leadership and I left in what I've described as the most gut-wrenching, distressing period of my entire career. And it was because of what was led under him in relation to, you know, everything from trying to discredit my professional reputation and my mental health. So I just, that's when I became an independent. I sort of had a front row seat, but in terms of an insight into Morrison's leadership, but Australians have had that front row seat for 3 years and for 3 years now. And they saw his conduct, aside from, you know, in relation to the bushfires and the floods, during 2021, what they saw from Morrison was zero accountability in relation to everything that happened. What they saw was ducking and weaving and reports and announcements and investigations and inquiries, but no real action, just platitudes. And, you know, and one example, Patricia, was the Respect at Work report that had been languishing on Christian Porter's desk for years and years, and for well over a year, 900 pages of a report. That report, it only came out after amid the controversy. It could well have been applied to across it. Its scope could have well have been broadened to cover parliaments. We didn't need another report. And in particular, one of the most signature law reforms that could have been was the positive duty on the employer to eradicate sexual harassment. Now, they put that, you know, on the shelf. They sort of put it under the carpet, thought we wouldn't notice, thought women wouldn't notice. Very excitingly, the Labor Party have said that they will fully implement all full 55 recommendations, including the positive duty. Now, that will change the the absolute, that is landmark law reform. It reminds me of when occupational health and safety legislation came in the manufacturing sector. So, you know, people voted for change, and they voted for change that is going to improve the treatment of women and the safety and respect and equity for women in workplaces and in organisations everywhere.
Georgie, Dan, I want to bring you in now. We don't have the data for this year yet, but we've seen female voters abandon the coalition over the years up to and including 2019. What were the factors that meant this frustration was finally heard?
Look, I think that what has happened at this election is that a whole lot of women who had maybe not engaged in a really substantive way before took matters into their own hands, and they started either running or they were campaigning or they were volunteering or they were in their line of work, they were doing whatever they could to make sure that the voices of women were going to be heard and that the issues that a lot of women care about were going to be taken seriously. Because I think that, I mean, as you pointed out, Patricia, the Liberal Party's sort of women problem has been identified for a very long time. And it nothing has been done to address it. We have not seen in substance or even in sort of symbolism, we have had no progress. We have had no recognition from the federal government for, you know, particularly over the last 3 years. When the pandemic hit, we know that women were the ones who lost their jobs faster. They lost income more quickly. We know that going into the pandemic, women were far less likely to be financially secure than men were. We know they are overrepresented in underpaid, in lower paid jobs. And you know, the October 2020 budget, which was at that point the biggest spending budget in Australia's history, it entirely overlooked women. And that was a point, and there was a huge backlash around that. And yet for the next two budgets that were handed down, there were some small improvements and there were little adjustments made, but there was no recognition from the Prime Minister or the Treasurer that the financial security of women is an issue. It's an issue that voters care about, that women care about, but also a lot of men care about too. And I think that having the calls for action met deaf ears and women took matters into their own hands. And I think that's what we saw from the March for Justice last year in March until May 21. Women got busy organising. They got busy getting elected. They got busy helping other women to get elected, because I think there was this collective understanding that we were not going to see any progress for women under the Morrison government.
Lisa Anise, you work with business to increase female representation. There will be a significant influx of women in the 47th Parliament, but the Liberal Party has actually gone backwards in terms of female MPs. Is it tenable in this day and age for any party to be losing significant numbers of women?
No, it's potentially existential for them, because it's not just about the representation of those individuals in the parliament. It's the issues and the pressure they bring to bear on the decisions and the policies that are formed. I'm also on the board of Women for Election. And what we know is that when you have gender balanced parliaments around the world, you get better policy. You get better policy for the community. You get better policy for children. You get better policy for healthcare. You get better policy for climate, and you get a more respectful work environment. This is something that the private sector has been working on for a long time. I am beyond thrilled that the positive duty will be one of the outcomes of the Albanese government. I think more than any other single piece of legislation, this has the power to transform workplaces into workplaces where women can fully contribute and fully participate. And we know that respect at work is one of the single biggest exclusionary things that keep women out. I think workplaces are going to need help and assistance with that, and I'll probably be a bit frightened, but we can do that. I remember when workplaces were responding to the Sex Discrimination Act. I remember when they were responding to the Affirmative Action Act. And the private sector certainly is miles ahead in terms of taking action on this. I think what we've seen more than anything is this idea that merit is not an objective measure It's an arbitrary, subjective concept imposed by the people who are in power in their image, and they impose it on behaviours and individuals that they groom for positions within the hierarchy. And what we saw is that women got organised. Women are very good at organising, and they demonstrated what merit really looks like. And that's our opportunity to transform not just the parliament, but the economy.
Julia, Peter Dutton is likely to run for the leadership of the Liberal Party. He's firming up very much as the favourite to take over as Liberal Party leader and opposition leader. Would he foster more women coming into the party?
Look, the Liberal Party have a philosophical objection to quotas, and I don't think that's going to change under Peter Dutton's leadership. I think the country breathed a sigh of relief on Saturday night when they saw the Teal Independents getting elected and with the change of government. I think under Peter Dutton, clearly the party, I left in 2018 because I felt the, moderates' voice was being drowned out. Well, after Saturday night, that it was clear that that has fully happened to 100% capacity. So I really cannot see it happening. I think the Liberals have got a lot of analysis to do and a lot of deep thinking to do, and they really just have to come out of their paradigm of thought. It's quite telling in relation to what's happened. The Australian public, particularly in those seats which have been held, from the beginning of time in terms of the Liberal Party, the seat of Higgins is now held by the ALP. That's never happened before in history. We've got the six Teal Independents and the Teal Independents, they need to really look at the fact that they were proposing in their campaign constructive, real action on climate change. The Liberals just play it as a political football. The Integrity Commission, after everything that's happened, they openly reject an Integrity Commission. And the treatment of women, well, that goes without saying. As Georgie said, the event, that collective voice of 2021 that came out in the March for Justice, where Morrison didn't even have the courtesy to come and address the March for Justice rally in Canberra. Well, he didn't have the courtesy to speak to us then, and I think women and men, I emphasise, spoke to him on election night and said, well, here's what we're going to do.
Look, just briefly to touch on some policy that might shift things or could shift things. Georgie, the Labor Party pledged an increase of more than $5 billion in childcare subsidies during the election campaign, but the Greens say they want universal free childcare. But clearly, Labor may want to end there at some point, but it's not the immediate thing that they're going to do. What's the case for universal free childcare, and how likely do you think it will happen in this term of Parliament?
Look, I think universal access is an absolute ambition of the Albanese government. In October 2020, in his budget reply speech, Anthony Albanese made that point that he would want his legacy, if he was Prime Minister, to make quality early childhood education and care universally accessible. Now, there's no doubt that that is a significant reform that will take time. But I think I am more hopeful than I have ever been that it is something achievable, because we have now got six of the Teal Independents who are in there are all supportive of making quality early childhood education and care radically more affordable. The Greens are very committed to that. And the Labor Party made their single biggest financial pledge was to make early learning more affordable for families. Now, the reason they're doing that is because it is smart economic policy, because it enables half the population population to participate in work on an equal playing field. So we know that women in Australia are the best educated in the world, and we have slid to 70th in the world for workforce participation. Now, that is a direct result of the fact that we have got some of the most expensive early childhood education and care in the world, which means it has been basically unaffordable for lots of different women to work more than 3 days a week or to work at all. And I do just want to say there has been a lot of discussion about the role that women have played at the ballot box this weekend, and they have, but I think it would be a mistake to frame that as just being professional women, because it wasn't just professional women who felt ignored and overlooked by the Morrison government. It was a whole lot of women who work in aged care, who work in early learning, who work as teachers, who work as nurses. And I think what we've seen is we know that making childcare more affordable and accessible for families, it actually sets children up to thrive, but it also gives women an opportunity to earn a living and to enjoy the dignity that comes with having a job. And this is really about redressing a structural barrier that we have had in place for decades now that has put women in the position where over the course of their lives, they're more likely to accumulate financial assaults than they are to accumulate wealth. And that's why we see so many women over 55 retiring with either no super or homeless, living in poverty. And early learning reform is a silver bullet. It magically reduces inequity. It sets children up for success, and it is economically compelling because the return on investment is so significant. It's up to $2 for every dollar spent.
Yeah, there is something very powerful about economic independence for women. Lisa, we see the teal independence praised everywhere as professional women. This is the sort of language that's been adopted. And that was just actually interestingly addressed there by Georgie, that it wasn't just professional women, such a loaded term, but I think, you know, we kind of know what sort of cohort it refers to. But that's not all women. I mean, the teals are white women from affluent areas who've had high-powered careers. How representative are they likely to be of the women's vote? Or, you know, you deal with the broader diversity issues. Obviously, that's not the most diverse picture of women.
No, and women aren't a monolith. And that's a very important thing to recognise when we're trying to create an economy where everybody can fully participate. I think what's really interesting about, say, for example, Anthony Albanese's victory speech was, again, he did talk about being raised by a single mum in public housing and the influence that has had on his life. So when we talk about inequality in Australia, we actually have to realise and acknowledge that the impact of your social class, that it has a significant impact on your access to employment opportunities, your professional development, even access to paid parental leave and childcare. We know that from our research that if you are in the lower class, 45% of those women have reported experiencing discrimination and harassment in the workplace. So you have to take an intersectional lens on women. I think, though, that the policy platform around a move towards universal childcare and move towards implementing the 55 recommendations in respect at work, the equal pay principle that will be introduced into Fair Work, into the Fair Work Commission on industry assessments, all of these things are fundamental measures that move in the right direction to create genuine equity, even amongst different classes of women. And that is vitally important.
We are out of time. I want to thank all three of you for joining me this morning. What a fascinating conversation. Thank you.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.